You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya,
and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustail. Hello, and welcome to Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. Dog-Eared Radio Book Club is a bi-weekly book club coming to you through the airwaves of CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Randy. I'm the host of this show. You can always contact me at email at dogearedbookclubradio@gmail.com, or else feel free to find me on Instagram at Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. I always look forward to hearing your thoughts on books that we're going to talk about, also book suggestions, whatever you feel like. I love talking about books. Without further ado, I want to introduce my guest for this episode. So today I'm joined by a returning guest who you might recognize from last summer, LaRonda. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Randy. Thanks for having me.
I'm super excited to do this episode. We are live right now. Not live as you're listening to this, but recording it in person, which is a fun experiment for me because I've never done this before and it's testing my knowledge of tech and recording. I'm so spoiled having gone into the studio and just used the radio station's equipment, but now that I've moved, I no longer have that privilege. So I hope the sound quality and content of this episode is great for you listeners, and I hope you enjoy it. So for today's episode, we are talking about a historical romance novel, but it's actually a novella, which I'm very excited to have on the show. We've never talked about a novella before, but I feel like it'll be cool because it's not too much content that we can maybe bring in some other books and like talk about some larger themes in the book. So we are talking about today Unlocked by Courtney Balon. So LaRonda, you suggested this when I asked you to be a guest on the show. You suggested this, but not only that, you recommended to me this book, oh, I think over a year ago when I first got into historical romance. So could you just briefly explain what draws you so much to this book?
Well, I think it's in the category of the hero grovels, which was a big category back in the day on Amazon. The chat where you could ask for suggestions. And so this is a hero grovels book. And they're so poorly done across all the ones I read. But this one, I think, was well done. Really well done. That was my memory. I've read it a number of times. So I thought, let's test it again. Do I still agree with my assessment that this is a good hero grovels book?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. I also got in, I love that like genre of like hero grovels and groveling. One that's really gone around on the internet is The Unwanted Wife by, I forget the author.
Natasha Anders?
Yes.
Yes.
And that's a book that I love to hate read. Whenever I just like get in a mood, I read it because I remember when I first read it, I was like looking for a book in that genre and I like came across it. And one of the top comments was, why did she stay with him? And I was like, oh, I gotta read this. And I agree with that comment. I'm just like, it's so, something about it, like, it just draws me to it, I think, because I'm just, like, so frustrated. Whereas this one, I was genuinely like, oh, yeah, like, this is actually, like, causing my brain to think, like, is this well-deserved?
Right. And the Unwanted Wife one, I do think that's one where it would be like sort of, like you said, a hate read. And that can inspire really good discussion, right? Because as we commiserate on the painful man he is. And this was a real test because I really love this book. I still love this book. So I think there's a lot to talk about.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. My notes were shockingly long for how short this book is. So we're going to start off, before we get too into the characters or plot or anything, we're going to go into the segment that I usually do that listeners are familiar with, where I read the description of the book and then we decide if it's accurate. I think it'll be interesting for this one because it is so short. It's a short book. So without further ado, this is the description for Unlocked by Courtney Balon. A perpetual wallflower destined for spinsterhood, Lady Elaine Warren is resigned to her position in society. So when Evan Carleton, the powerful, popular Earl of Westfield, singles her out upon his return to England, she knows what it means. Her former tormentor is up to his old tricks, and she is his intended victim. This time, though, the Earl is going to discover that wallflowers can fight back. Evan has come to regret his cruel, callow past. At first, he only wants to make up for past wrongs, but when Elaine throws his initial apology in his face, he finds himself wanting more, and this time, what torments him might be love.
Do I agree with that?
Yeah.
I'm not quite correct, I would say.
Yeah.
He's going to be in for a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the book, that's what I really was noting this time around, is from his perspective for most of it. And then you start hearing Lady Elaine's perspective. So it's more about his change.
Yeah.
And then, there's elements of how she changes throughout the book. But I think it's more about him changing. Than, when I hear that, I'm like, okay, she's figured out a way to get back at him. And I wouldn't say that's the theme of the book at all.
No.
But.
Yeah, I would agree with that I really think Evan is the main character of this book, and the description very much kind of misleads that into believing that Elaine is, which I think is kind of its downfall. Like, I feel like if the author could have just fully leaned into the fact, but I think it's not taboo. That's not, that's too strong of a word, but it's kind of unpopular to make a male the main character of a romance novel, even though I think some authors have done it just so exceptionally well. So I would agree with you that I think it's a bit misleading. It covers a general plot of that, he's, he tormented her, he's asking for forgiveness, and then, love.
Yeah.
But it definitely kind of misleads that, Elaine is, the one that goes through all these changes, where I think when we meet her, she's already kind of at that point. It's not that much further that she has to go, which is interesting.
Yeah, I really do think Courtney Milan is an amazing writer. I mm-hmm. don't think you can fault her writing in this book.
No.
The plot, really well done. If you want to really get to the point of everything, this book does it for you. There's no chapters of leading up and backstory and context.
Yeah.
It's right from the get-go, right into the story, which is probably one of the reasons why it's one of my favorite books.
Mm-hmm.
She is, how do I say, we'll get into it a little bit more. I was just thinking some elements of the novella. It was extraordinary to read this book. And there's a little tidbit of information dropped.
Yeah.
No backstory to it or anything. And I'm am I okay with that?
Yeah.
I think I am. It doesn't matter. One of the characters in the book, Lady Stockhurst.
Yeah.
She has 4 children, I think, because it's only mentioned once.
Yeah.
And it feels like it should be important, but I guess it's not. And it really probably isn't. So I was like, it is interesting reading a book where there's just right to the point and I'm not flipping to get through a whole bunch of words. I thought, there's a few other ones. I'm not sure if I'll remember them. But that one really is what? She has 4 kids?
Yeah. The one that I always got stuck on is when, so we get the time jump. We'll explain all this later in the show. But we get the time jump. And then they're at a ball. And Elaine goes up to this duchess and is like, oh, yeah, we're best friends. I'm like, the beginning of the book made me think you were a loner. So now you're best friends with a duchess? What? But you very much, it feels weird that you, move past that so quickly, because there's just, I don't know. I compare this book to, a really good piece of, really rich chocolate cake, where you just need a little bit. You don't want to eat the whole thing. You eat your little sliver, and you're, satisfied by it somehow. And even if, we'll get into the forgiveness, all of that stuff, but I think even if you're not agreeing with that, just the act of reading this book leaves you feeling a lot of novellas are just, they feel pointless. They feel okay, where's the rest of it? So I think this one does deliver on that.
And not to spend too much time, because the book is very interesting, but the context of this novella in the middle of a series.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Duchess and the Sir Mark Turner is all, I didn't enjoy the books near as much as this novella.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, great. I've got a series I'll love. I love this novella. I don't think I've ever reread the other books in the series.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, I mean, I didn't even attempt to read, because I think you told me that when you recommended the novella. So I just read the novella, and then I was like, oh, this is good. So the one thing I do want to mention, again, before we get into characters in this book, I think a lot of people would call this a bully romance. And I have arguments that I disagree with that. I think my main reason I disagree with it is because we get such a, like, we get, like, two time jumps. So we get, you know, like, the 10 years that have passed since he tormented her. And then we also get the time jump of 9 months while they're friends. And so, because to me, like, having read bully romances before, it usually happens pretty quick. It's like you're actively falling in love with someone who is harming you. And I think this book doesn't do that. Like, she has no love for him when he's harming her. And I also think that, like, he, like, that classic excuse of, like, oh, I'm just mean to you because I like you. That doesn't really fly in this book. Like, we'll get into it later, like, his initial apology and where he explains his, like, motivation. I feel like it's deeper than that, which I appreciated. It wasn't just like, oh, I had a crush on you, and so I just didn't know how to, you know, act on it, so I just made you, you know, hurt. But I'm curious, like, I don't know if you're really familiar with the genre of bully romance or, like, how you would kind of apply that term or if you would apply it to this book.
I guess I agree with you that there was no inclination of her being attracted to that. So if that's an element of bully romance, that while your bully is bullying you, there's some sort of weird attraction to the finding them attractive.
Yeah.
No. But he is a bully.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess it's not a bully romance. So.
No.
But I do like reading. I probably like the bully part, but it has to come with the grand, the groveling. And that's where, I mean, just to contrast it maybe to Unwanted Wife. Mm-hmm. Like, you hate read it because it's a story that's well put together.
Yes.
Can we say that?
Oh, yeah.
And the bullying part gets you fired up.
Yeah.
And then the groveling doesn't quite measure up to the bullying.
Well, and I think I would classify that as bully romance because it's immediate.
Yeah.
Like, we're supposed to believe that, like, within a few weeks of him not acting like a buffoon, all of a sudden she's like, yeah, I'll have a baby with you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, what? Also, I'm sorry, listeners, we're going to spoil Unwanted Wife. But I mean, if you haven't read it by now, you probably already know what happens. So I think we're kind of in line on that. So I'm not really sure, like, when I was, you know, drafting my notes for this episode of, like, how to talk about it. Should we talk about, like, plot points and then talk about characters? Because I think often we, like, on the show, we talk about characters first, but I almost feel like this book we should talk about the plot first because the characters are kind of interwoven with the plot. So I think one thing that we can start on is, the apology.
Okay.
So, Evan makes, I guess, multiple apologies in this. So essentially the bullying aspect, which we don't actually see in the book, we don't read it. We read it as past tense because when the novella starts, we've met them. They're in their late 20s or 30. I can't remember how old they are.
The timeline's a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
But I think she was 17 and then 10 years later, she's 27. And then, like you said, the second time jump of 9 months.
Yeah.
And he's, I think, 29. I think she was 17.
Yeah.
When she first came out for her first season and he would have been 2 years older than her.
Yeah.
So I think that's a start, which just to not to put too fine a point on it, they were 17 and 19.
Yeah.
They're just a little...
Yeah.
Like children behaving very immaturely, right? Mm-hmm. Or he was, for sure. She didn't do anything to warrant that. So I just, like, it was hard for me to I mean, they should act better.
Yeah.
But they were just 2017, I mean, 17 and 19, and now they're 27, 29, and
Yeah. So when the novella starts, we meet them in their late 20s. But the instance of bullying that we learn about is Evan essentially mocked and bullied Elaine for her laugh. We're told that she has a very boisterous, embarrassing, loud laugh. I think they say that she snorts.
Well, it's some combination between a horse and a pig. It was terrible.
Yeah. So they compared her. So they called her Lady Equine. And yeah, so Evan essentially started this, and then it, because he was so popular in his position and he was so well liked in society, it kind of spurred on. And then his cousin, Lady Diane, also was in on it, and it became this huge thing that lasted for months, essentially, Elaine's entire first season, I believe. And then, Evan left England. He left and went far, far away. And now at the beginning of the novella, he's back, and it's 10 years later. So when he first meets Elaine, he attempts to ask her to dance, which she very non-politely is like, why? And then, proceeds to insult him while they're dancing, which I think is so good. That's such a good part to put in. And he's very aware, right? Like, he, at this point, when we meet him, he is aware that he's done wrong. He's aware that he's got, like, so much work to do to earn back any form of, like, relationship and trust. But the main part of the apology I want to talk about is his public apology. So I believe, I'm not sure if they're at a, if this is still at the house party or if this is another instance.
Well, when Lady Diana, his cousin's really going to put her up on a pedestal and knock her down.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's kind of like a weekend at someone's house. And she's arranged for this, the Elaine's mother to do her science presentation in front of quite a few people.
Yeah.
Like, this was all planned by Lady Diana to be a big thing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people there.
Yeah. Yeah. So he, and they're essentially asking him, because when he left, he became a mountaineer, I don't know. basically an outdoor adventurer, right? And so they're asking him to, like, talk about, you know, his stories. And so he's telling this story about how they were on this, like, ice cliff or something, and they're all tied together, and he fell, and as opposed to cutting the rope, the two men he was with chose to risk their lives to save him. And so he's telling the story, and then somehow that, like, leads into him talking about, you know, his wrongs and essentially apologizing. And he ends that apology by saying, essentially, I don't expect your forgiveness, but if you need anything, I'm indebted to you. Like, really recognizing that he doesn't deserve it. Like, I think at this point he's aware he doesn't deserve it. He really wants it because he's still in love with her. He's been in love with her since he was 19 and it never went away. But I personally like this apology. I thought I had, like, copied it to read it, but it must not be important. But I'm curious about, like, what you thought of that moment and how you took his words.
I thought it was a brilliant public apology, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he publicly shamed her and embarrassed her, right? So he stood publicly, and he explained, he gave himself no forgiveness in the apology, and really told from his perspective, like, his, not that his perspective is, you know, something that we need to buy into, but I think he's just building on how bad of a person he was at 19, that the worst thing that could happen is if someone knew he was in love with her.
Yeah.
That was the worst thing in his mind. So instead of being, the worst thing would be if Lady Elaine didn't like him. To me, that would be the worst thing if you were in love with her.
Yeah.
And so everything he did went off that premise is, don't let anyone catch me. Mm-hmm. Catch me being, like, completely besotted by Lady Elaine. Like, I think physical attraction was a big part in this, right? Like, I don't know how well they get to know each other when they're at these dances and they're dancing. I think a lot of it is physical attraction, right? So how well did he know her to fall in love with her?
Yeah.
But physically, he was extremely attracted to her.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I did finally find the quote that I took from the book. So he says, quote, "I was the worst of the lot. I made up half the cruel names. I would go up to her, speak to her face just for the thrill of talking with her. And as soon as someone looked my way, I'd slip in an insult so nobody would think I cared." Yeah, so to me, like, that reads as, like, more than, like, oh, I had a crush on you, so I bullied you because I didn't know how to talk to you. For him, it was the insecurity of someone knowing that he was talking to her or that he liked her. And I think also part of it, they don't really touch in the novel, but I get the sense that he was afraid of her rejection.
Right. Yeah. Don't ever get himself in that position where yeah. she would reject him.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought that was, like, a good start. Because, again, this is, like, closer to the beginning of the novella. This is, like, one of the first times they're interacting again after he's been gone and he's back now. And, of course, it is a lot to put on her, right? It's, like, public apologies are great, but it also brings so much attention to the person you're apologizing for. So there is that element where I do kind of feel for how, like, you know, she was kind of surprised and then she just fleed. Like, she left. She's like, I can't deal with it. Which is fair, because, like, what do you say? Or, you know, people might expect you to be like, oh, I forgive you. But that's also not what he's asking for, right?
So yeah, he presumed to a lot.
Yeah.
To make all that public, right? Mm-hmm. She didn't get a choice in all that being public again. So if I said to you when I wanted to do this book is review the, like, the apology and everything he did, his acts for forgiveness to see whether they stand up to the test of time for me. And yeah, he did take that away from her, right? Yeah. Like, she could have said all that. He could have said all that to her in private and be willing to say it public to everyone too. I don't know.
Yeah.
She didn't seem, like, she seemed to appreciate that it was public, so.
Yeah. She definitely wasn't, like, mad about it, but you like that element of being surprised. Like, you're kind of like, oh, like, what? You know, you're frozen. It's like any time, if you're not someone who, like, is used to the center of attention, which, like, he is, and so is his cousin, but Lady Elaine has never been the center of attention for anything. So I think that is, like, part of her character, that, like, she's so just taken aback when you make her the center of attention. She's not really sure what she should be doing.
And his privilege, right, as a man in this world, and being the bullied, he has so much privilege to just, everyone will agree with him, listen to him, pat him on the back. Mm-hmm. Like, he has so much privilege compared to her.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this novel, like, just going back a bit, I think the other reason that this, like, apology and, like, this aspect works well in the context of this novel is because it's historical romance. Because that reasoning makes sense. Because so I'm reading another series right now, which, of course, I can't remember the author because I never can when I mention a book on the show. But in it, there's this one guy, and he's 29, and his mom, he's a duke. So his mom is like, I gotta get you married. You gotta be married. And he's like, I don't wanna get married. No one gets married under 30. Like, I can't believe you expect me as a man to get married under 30. So that is kind of like a part element of Regency romances, is that, like, men, there's no expectation for men to get married that young. Women always get married young, right? She debuted at 17. So I think that, like, adds to it, right? If we were to put the same thing in a contemporary, I don't think it would resonate as well as it does. I really think that Courtney Milan does a good job of playing on the rules and etiquette of that time period to really contribute to this, plot and apology character, all of that.
Right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, you can't bring these to modern times and expect it to be the same part.
Mm-hmm.
I had some issues with his, the grand design of his apology. Because it was bigger than just apologizing to Lady Elaine. It was getting a platform to her mom, her mother, who's this amazing, I would say, astronomist, physicist, mathematician. Yeah. A platform so she could be more elevated in front of the peerage, right? So that's the right word, right? And so, and the reason he helped her mom was to get to Lady Elaine. Which, can't you just help this? He had status. He was able to make things better for her mom, but only did it to make Elaine happy.
Yeah. But
it's, you know, like, I am asking a weird thing, but he knew this woman. She was being mocked and laughed in the society, in the room. And without Elaine, would he have just sat there, stood there and not done anything?
Mm-hmm.
Allowed her to be ridiculed because he wasn't attracted to her mother?
Yeah.
So I had a little problem in using her mom as a way to get to Lady Elaine and prove his seriousness or his changed behavior is really what it was.
Yeah, I almost think it would have been more powerful if he would have did that action before Elaine had agreed to be his friend. Like, because you're talking about, like, when we get the 9-month time jump, then she's, they ask her to do another lecture, and he goes and invites all of these very prominent people, powerful people, and they show up to support Lady Stalkhurst, right, yeah. where his cousin is attempting to embarrass her. So I almost think having him do an action like that before, like,
yeah.
we get that period of them being friends.
I might have
friends.
Got the two, because there's two times
oh,
where
I guess
he stands
there is two
up
times, yeah.
that get flipped in my mind.
Right, yeah. So before that, because Lady Stalkhurst does end up doing her talk at this, I'm going to call it a house party, because I think that's a term that they use of, like, you would go and stay at these people's yeah. houses for, like, a while and do, like, things together and have tea party, whatever. So at this house party, he does also stand up, and he's done the research and asked questions to, like,
okay, that time,
like, draw
yeah.
the attention. But then in addition, he also 9 months later, when she's asked to give another talk, he brings in people from, I forget, it's called, like, the something society, I don't know. And so, yeah, I almost feel like if he had, like, which now I'm thinking, does he do that before she agrees to be friends with him? The first time?
Here we are going to be talking about, what do you, because I even reading it again, I thought I had it. Like, she runs out, and she's in the garden this time.
Yeah.
And he meets her in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, in 5 minutes or whatever, us we'll be best friends, yeah. right?
That's the second time. So that's after the 9 month. Wait,
but then
but
no,
they
but
do
then
the same
friends
thing, don't they? Because I swear they do. Because he kisses her twice. The first time he's like, "We'll be friends," but then he's like, "Okay, give me 1 minute, and then we'll be friends."
Yeah, that's the first time. That's the
yeah.
part one I'm thinking
okay,
about.
Okay, that's when you
yeah,
came,
that's
yeah.
thinking about. And yeah, he kisses her, and that's it. They won't ever kiss again. They're just friends, and then
yeah.
they have this beautiful friendship. Like
yeah.
it sounds like really powerful. And I think I would take points away from him for sure. If he had tried to blur the line on the friendship
mm-hmm.
through that, and then it was up to her to lead the way, which I think is the right way
yeah.
to do it, right? But, I mean, I don't know if he's 100% honest that he was just fine being friends with Lady Elaine.
And that's, like, that's the root of it. Like, you never know that, right?
Yeah.
And, like, again, if this is contemporary, I wouldn't believe a single thing he said, because the way men behave... of, like, I'll be friends with you, but then if eventually you don't sleep with mm-hmm. me, I'm not your friend. Like, I'm only your friend until you sleep with me. And that's hard, right? Like, it's hard to tell because, you know, you want to believe that because, you know, for a full 9 months, he's, like, very good friends with her and supports her, and they have this very, like, loving, caring relationship. But there's, in the back of your mind, you're always like, would it though? Like, if it hadn't eventually happened that, like, you know, she did forgive him and they are together, like, what would he have done? Which is, you know, it's, and we don't know. We have no idea. But
he spent this 9 months. Yeah, it's hard to think of that. There's like three time periods, right?
Mm-hmm.
The bullying period back when they were teenagers. Then he comes back.
Yeah.
And he's a changed man and he acts differently and makes some overtures towards her that are supposed to indicate that he's changed. And then there's the 9 month friendship and then getting together after that. The other part that kind of, and this is not on him, this is, I think, on the character development. Like, mm-hmm. we sure learn a lot about Evan. What's his name? Evan, right?
Evan.
And his hobby.
Yeah.
We sure learn a lot about her mom's
yeah.
science endeavors. What about Lady Elaine? What does
yeah.
she like to do?
Yeah.
I thought there should have been space in the novella. She's a person, too. What does she do? Just go to balls and stand on the
yeah.
walls and wait, you know, and be miserable?
Yeah.
Like, she certainly cares about her mom.
Yeah.
How come we didn't get to learn more about her? So that's why we sure learned a lot about Evan. Mm-hmm. That's why I think he is the main character in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one thing that I did find interesting upon my reread is obviously on, I have this book on Kobo, but either way, you can make notes on it, right? And so when I had first read this book, I had a note because when he, like after he first apologizes, then they're talking and she shares with him what his bullying resulted in. And so essentially she had her maid attempt to drown her every time she laughed as a goal of getting rid of this laughter. And in the end, it didn't work. And she ended up very sick for a long time. And my initial note on that moment was, I don't think he can come back from this. Because when she shares that, like, it's a heartbreaking moment, right? Like, understanding the lengths and the depths of what that did to her psyche, like, her mental health and where she was at with that. So I think it's really interesting because, obviously, on my reread, I knew the ending. Like, I knew the whole book. So it was hard to, like, reevaluate that honestly because, like, did I still agree with that point? Like, did I even agree with it at the end of my first read? Because, of course, I didn't leave any notes because sometimes I just get wrapped up in a book and I forgot to leave notes. But I'm curious if that, like, moment struck anything for you.
Yeah, I mean, now that I think about it, yeah, for sure. The moment where the victim of the bullying is explaining the impact, I think, is really important. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I kind of probably skimmed over that. So I know you make a really good point because that was really important. And then immediately I was looking at my phone for a second because there's another definitely bully, not romance, bully book, very similar to this one, I would say, called Here's Looking at You by Mary McFarlane. I don't know if I've convinced you to read it yet.
I don't know if I have. Probably because I had to pay for it.
Yes, exactly. And she the moment where she tells him, gives him the true impact of his bullying, is really powerful in how the hero responds to that conversation. Like, you're reading a book and going, he better not misstep one little bit. Not one hair can be wrong on listening to someone explain to you how your cruel behavior impacted them.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, that,
And I do think he took it so deeply. Like, he knew at that moment that I don't think I'm ever going to get to be with you. And obviously, he wasn't completely hopeless because he still, you know, was a part of her life and, like, did all of those things. But I do think, I agree, that's such a, like, key moment.
So, he actually thought, I saw how it impacted you. I saw you in the ballroom.
Yeah.
No thought.
Yeah.
To what? Her going back into private and still processing it in the trauma. It's just shocking to me that he was feeling bad for what he did to her without thinking further.
Yeah, not realizing how much deeper it would go.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a very quick break. So don't go anywhere, listeners, and we'll be back. Whoa, hold on. Where are you taking all those cacti?
I need to put them near the radio.
How come?
They love to hear Everly's nature-based music on Dead Succulent Haunt every Thursday at 5 p.m. on CITR 101.9.
Oh, Dead Succulent Haunt? Where your plants can grow and you can mourn those you've lost?
Come on, plants, let's grow.
Do you want to change the state of the world? But instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder, because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
All right. Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and you're listening to the show Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. My name is Randy. I'm the host of this show, and I'm joined today by my guest, LaRonda.
Hello.
And we are talking about the book Unlocked by Courtney Milan, a historical novella. So this book is a romance, grovel, second chance, whatever you want to classify it as. So before the break, we left off chatting about this like redemption, groveling, kind of where we're at with that. So the question that you posed to me on your reread is like, how could he have gone about his redemption, groveling, forgiveness route differently? So the way he does it is like he publicly apologizes and then essentially is like, can I be your friend? And, well, I think she actually offers friendship. I'm not sure. It's kind of fuzzy about, like, who does what. But anyways, they are friends for 9 months. We get this time jump. We come to this moment where he has organized this very prominent scholar person to come and listen to Elaine's mother, who's a very, as you said earlier, a brilliant astronomy person. Astrologist, I'm not sure which. I always get them mixed up. I think it's astronomy, though, because astrology is like, yeah. So astronomy, mathematician, she's absolutely brilliant. And so he's done this, and like Elaine is just like so shocked and amazed that he's done this. And that's kind of the moment where she realizes that he is indeed still in love with her, or is in love with her, because I'm not sure if she ever knew that he was before. Yeah, so we kind of get that confrontation. So I guess for me, like, that question when you're like, how could he have done it differently? For me, it really is, like, the friendship aspect. And the conclusion that I kind of came to is, like, I think it works because it allows them to get to know each other. As you mentioned earlier in the episode, like, did they ever know each other? Like, I think he just, like, saw her and was like, oh my gosh, you're so beautiful, I love you. But he never knew her as a person. He never knew who she was. So I think that 9 months of friendship actually gives them the opportunity to truly fall in love with each other. Even though I think, you know, he thought he was in love with her, but I think like true love, right? Not just like instant attraction. So for me, it did kind of work out well with the friend, because like he maintained a presence in her life. It's not like he like went away and then came back and there was no connection or they didn't spend any time together. So I'm curious where you kind of landed on that because you asked me that question. So I'm curious where you landed on that upon your reread.
I I think that friendship period was the key. And they probably knew each other better in that 9 months than a lot of the couples in that time period getting married, right? She said she really grew to rely, enjoy his friendship, like humor, conversation, all that. So, no, that's amazing. They actually got an opportunity to get to know each other. And now, I can't recall, at the end of that, she kind of gives him indication that it will never go further.
Yeah.
And so how he responds to that was sort of the key to me. Like, were you just being friends for the end goal? Or were you truly liking this woman?
Yeah.
And I think he was a little sad because he was in love with her. He did fall in love with her and attracted her. But he seemed that, no, I'll be your friend for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So to me, yes, he did what he was supposed to do. I have a couple of nitpicks that we already talked about.
Yeah.
But as far as putting himself in a vulnerable position in front of her, fully apologizing, supporting her, getting to know her, I struggle to find out what he missed.
Yeah. Well, and before the break, we were talking about this. Yeah, like exactly like, you know, would he have done all these things? And I think what you're saying, like how he responded to that moment, which I'll explain a bit more, to me, it also indicated that he was in the friendship to be part of her life. So after he like does this grand thing for Elaine's mom, he sort of realizes that she realizes what's going on, and he leaves and she follows him, and he sort of like says this like, can I make you happy? That's the question that he poses to her, and she doesn't say anything. So he responds, quote, don't feel pity for me. Someday I'll find someone I can make happy, truly happy. I'm sure of it. But for now, I'm perfectly content to have had this moment with you. I won't ask for anything else. End quote. So I really think that for me, like completely, because at that moment, like she rejected him essentially. Like, you know, she didn't immediately like, yes, I love you, like, be with me. And so he was forced to accept that. And he did. He accepted it and said, and I think, I'm not sure where he says it, but somewhere he does say, I hope you find someone who makes you happy. But at the same time, I can recognize that it was hard for him, right? Like, letting go of this person that you love would be so difficult. So he goes home and he is sad and lonely in his library. Whereas Elaine goes home and, you know, sits with that and thinks about like, well, do I have feelings for him? Like, what are those feelings that I have for him? I really like that. I applaud Courtney Milan for writing that moment. Cause I think for me, like, that's what so many of these groveling romances are missing, is that moment where, you know, it's usually the man that grovels, let's face it, where he accepts.
Absolutely. I was saying exact same thing, that I think that was the author really giving us that moment that does ring true. It should have been so cheap and easy for her to be that, you know, thinking a movie.
Yeah.
Like, can you see a movie, moment. The grand moment where they come together? Putting this scene in, you lose that grand moment.
Yeah.
But I think it's the key to a satisfactory result.
Well, it keeps you guessing, right? Because you're expecting this to be the grand moment. Okay, so Elaine realizes that he's in love with her. You know, she's been having these thoughts about him too throughout their friendship. This is the moment where she runs out and they do dramatically kiss. They do dramatically kiss. But then after that, when he says, like, can I make you happy? She says, no. Okay, well, I've had this moment and I love that. And he leaves. He then leaves. She goes home. And, I mean, it's still kind of a dramatic moment. She, you know, runs over and, like, runs into his house.
Knocks on his door at midnight.
Yeah. Like, I think it was raining.
Yeah.
But I think that's cool because it kept me guessing, right? This first time you're expecting it. And then, you know, you're kind of like, what's going to happen? Like, you know, does she forgive him? Is she going to? So again, like you said, she's such a brilliant writer. And I think that this, to me, this novella is a great way to draw people into reading her work, because it is, right, like a little taste. And then you're like, oh, like I could, you know, get more out of that.
Yeah, I think there is a enjoy about reading a novella, especially if I'm flipping pages for half the book.
Yeah.
I really do appreciate the condensing of the information that Courtney gives us. So I can't be too negative on some of the things, but like, what were Lady Aline's hobbies? Like, okay, I can give that. Like, it's there. Just presume it's there. Lady Diana, she's got four kids. I don't really know. Her husband's on the continent. She's, I don't know. Like, there's so much I don't know.
Yeah.
But did it really matter, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah, at the end, like, I really think you're still fulfilled when you read this. And no book is perfect. Like, when we had our monster romance last summer, I guess. So me and my cousins, like in our episodes, it's very funny because we try to like plan out what the perfect book would be. And then, you know, we realized like who would read that book? Like, yeah. Just like, I can't imagine reading something that's so perfect. You'd be bored.
This book had some really like little scenes.
Yeah.
Like, end scene that were so really good that I remember, and I can really picture in my head mm-hmm. them happening. The one scene that I kind of like when they first meet up again in the ballroom and his cousin saying, "How is your stables?"
Mm-hmm.
to Lady Aline, and she's like, "Oh, they're fine. How's yours?" Here's two people that despise each other talking about their horses, and it's all code word to get around Lady Aline's insult name that he came up with. And Evan's like, "Leave off the talk of the horses."
Yeah.
Just the way he's like, done with any of this coded bullying-ness. Yeah. And Lady Aline was being like fake sweet. That was a really good vignette, like sort of like a end scene. And then the moment where the cousin horribly, like, is this a grown woman?
Yeah.
Spilling wine on her gown.
Ugh.
And then she goes up and he finds her. Like, in her worst moment, like, she never, ever let him see her cry.
Yeah.
And he sees her cry.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good response where he knows he has to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, boom. And so he comes up with a plan for him to be under her control, that he is vulnerable.
Yeah.
And we already talked about some of those, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, how she sets the scene, and I can visualize the... how dark or light or whatever.
Yeah.
She's sitting on the ground.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
In this home.
Her dress everyone is
else,
half undone.
Yeah. And everyone else is downstairs at the party. And he finds her like that. Like, she must have felt so exposed.
Yeah.
And she is nasty to him in that moment. Like, she lets loose.
Which I love. Yeah. Like, I think that was, like, another thing that the author did, like, Elaine wasn't this like mouse character that was like so afraid, you know, like she did. And I think that is proven by, like, you know, one of the last scenes we get when she comes into the ball and she's wearing a bright red gown. Like, she walks in, like, she owns the room. She's done hiding. She owns the room. And she walks, like, I think that red dress is so symbolic of, like, you know, like, we talked about the character development. That's, like, the little bit of character development she does go. Like, and I think, again, that's why I do like, we don't get to see the friendship. But one thing that I think comes out of it is that she, like, Lady Aline is given this environment to flourish and grow and gain more confidence. And, I mean, that's what your friends should do for you, right? They should encourage you to better yourself. And I think that they're both able to do that in that friendship. Yeah, Lady Diane, or Diane, I don't even know her name. I don't want to get, like, too into her, because I feel like I could get too into her. But I do think she is an interesting character, because obviously she's the antagonist for, like, the whole novel, until the very end. But the one quote that she says is, quote, I guess I should give context. So she's confronting Evan, because Evan's like, "Why can't you stop this? You need to stop doing this. Like, you're being awful and terrible." And so she says, quote, "They're wolves out here, and they devour," and, oh, I did not quote this well, I'm sorry. "They're wolves out here, and they devour or be devoured in turn. And you don't grasp your place in society, you'll have it torn from you, just like your Lady Aline." And so essentially her whole thing that we get throughout this book every time Evan confronts her is that she's essentially chosen to be a wolf. She imagines a society for women. You're a wolf or you're a sheep. So you're either going to be the one that's inflicting pain, or you're going to face pain. And my thing is, like, she's awful, but I also get it. I do understand that that's, like, you could get in that mindset and that fear of, like, you know, being afraid. And, like, we don't know what her family is like. So, you know, I've read historical romance, like, terrible parents, right? If you don't conform, you don't do this, like, you're going to be shamed. And so that's not me, like, excusing, because she is awful. But I do think she is, like, an interesting side character and an interesting, like, subplot. How, like, she goes through this and, like, you know, and then at the very end, we get her in that first, like, the only moment of vulnerability we've seen. Well, actually, I guess we get two. But in, like, kind of her putting herself in a vulnerable place is when she walks up to that woman. We don't know who she is. And she says, "I owe you an apology." That's it. That's all we get. So it's kind of left as, like, dangling. Like, we don't know what would happen next. But again, I do think, I guess what I'm trying to say is the author didn't just make me hate her. I think that's really easy to do if you have an antagonist or, like, a villain in a book. Like, with the amount of words in this book, somehow Milan was able to add in a depth that was more than just, like, a sheer hatred of her.
Right. She did. Yeah, in not, very few words, because she's not given a lot of pages, give that there's complexity there. It's not as simple as, yeah, that's the horrible person. And and they talked a little bit about their childhood, Evan and Diana, right? Like, they really were close.
Yeah.
Who knows why, right? Like, left alone to grow up. They're young.
Yeah.
And I think at one point she also does talk about, like, a lot of her... You know, her, not aggression, but that her being a wolf was to hide who she really was. So other people could not see her vulnerability. And it speaks to that Evan was a lot easier to, for a man to, like, be his true self.
Yeah. Well, and we get that because when he comes back from his mountaineering, he's able to just slip right back into society. And he won't even conform to the ideals, right? Like... We are told throughout the whole book that he continues to wear brown. When wearing brown is frowned upon for a gentleman of the aristocracy. So he's an earl at this point because his father's died. That's why he came back. But yeah, so he's able to kind of just like shrug off these expectations. Whereas neither lady... I mean, Diane does have an advantage of being married. She really does. Because again, in this society, being married gives you these privileges. And yeah, so I really liked her again as an antagonist because there was so much more depth than just, I dislike this person. I hate them and I want them to go away. Similarly, I feel very good, or not similar as in I hated her, but the lady or the character of Lady Stalker, so Elaine's mom, again, a very interesting character because one of my first thoughts is if this was a man, none of this would be a problem.
Yeah.
like, she's very much, you know, she's coded to have these behaviors of, like, I don't want to label them, but being a, like, you know, very brilliant, but, like, impersonal. Like, she's not very good at, like, reading social cues. Like, she can't, you know, hold, like, a conversation because her brain moves so fast and she'll move on to different topics. All things that are considered part of this, like, genius archetype, except for when it's a woman. And so, yeah, I really liked her. And I like the relationship that she has throughout the book with Elaine, that it does kind of, like, develop. Again, when you were talking about that moment where Elaine is so vulnerable, part of the reason is because that's the first time she's really blown up at her mom. So she just finished, like, telling her mom, okay, well, I didn't save it, but she basically says, like, they make me hate you because they bully you and they do all this stuff and you don't even realize it and I have to see it and the worst thing that they have done is they make me hate you, which, like, is such a powerful moment in the book. And I really liked how we saw that develop and how, you know, they still had a relationship, but, you know, both were able to recognize that they weren't maybe going to communicate all the time. Again, just, like, it's amazing how many, like, subplots and, like, side characters there are in this book for how, like, I think it's, like, 170 pages on Kobo or Kindle. Like, it's so short. But I'm curious of what you thought of Lady Stalker's, like...
Yeah, like, and it's what I found interesting, I think there's one mention of her father. Like, yeah. Her father is around, but he's just not part of this story at all. I liked her character. My degree is in math. I'm all supporting someone. She is way more brilliant than I am, of course. Even she's talking about she looks at human attraction, a gravitational pull between two planets. And she relates, human attraction to gravitational pull. And yeah, she's you do not read too many characters like that. And she had enough to say, I always thought he was sweet on you. Like, her mom is the one that saw it back in the first phase when the bullying was happened. Which is a little bit easy. Oh, he just bullies you because he likes you.
He just pays attention because he likes you. Yeah. Yeah, which, and then I do, yeah. I don't even know what else to say about her. But I just, again, I think she's a really interesting character. But, and I do, like, they add, that's the thing. I don't think there's characters in this book that take away from the story.
Absolutely. Even the little throwaway to her, I really enjoy the little moments when her maid, the little vision she saw, like, they gave a perspective of this housemaid who's not saying anything but is watching, listening to everything that's going on. Little comments, right? Yeah. Even just before their wedding night and getting her ready. And a very, very small role, but made it really cool. I thought added a neat little dimension towards the end of the book that I think her name's Mary Pearson. But you're right, absolutely. Yeah. There's no side character that doesn't add to the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have come to our time, which I knew that no matter how short this book is, you'd have so much to say about it. But I'm curious if you have, like, any last thoughts that you want to leave off on.
I probably summed it up already. I see, 10 flashes of really evocative imagery that her words, and I love that I can take away from that book. And I can say that doesn't happen for all books, maybe one, but this has, like, a good many scenes that play out in my head, and they're like, oh, that was cool the way she wrote that.
I completely agree. This book was stuck in my head. I actually, before you suggested it, I was going to suggest it, because when I was like, I was trying to think, I was like, what book do we always talk about? And then I was like, well, this book we've talked about. And I'll also recommend to listeners, I mean, go read this book, even though if you listen to this whole thing, it's fine. Like, you'll still enjoy it. You'll get so much out of it. And I also really recommend it if you're someone who's a romance reader and you're in a reading slump right now. I think this is, like, guaranteed to get you out of a reading slump. Even for someone, like, rereading a book like this gets me out of a reading slump, because there's something about it. It's very short. It's to the point. But it'll leave you with that fulfilled that will then lead you, like, well, in my case, it'll just lead me down a historical romance rabbit hole. But, I think there's so much in this book. So thank you so much for coming on the show today, LaRonda.
Thanks for having me. Favorite book.
It's a great conversation. Thank you to the listeners for listening. I hope you all have a great rest of your Tuesday, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.